Welcome. You're listening to Ireland Life with myself, David Kinley, a series of programmes entitled New World, Old Ways, where we discuss the history, culture, folklore, superstitions and music of the Manx emigrees to the New World, the USA and in particular the Appalachian Mountains. In today's episode, where better to start than pretty much at the beginning, on the voyage of the Mayflower in 1620 with the Pilgrim Fathers. Is there a Manx connection? Yes, there is. I went over to Cultivanan to talk to Dr. Chloe Woolley. So, at the beginning here, thank you very much, Chloe, for this little chat here at Cultivanan. We're going to talk about something which is a real passion of mine, which is the Appalachian Mountains in Eastern America. More well known for its hillbilly culture and everything. How did it become there? First of all, we got to get there, so we're going to talk about emigration. So let's start on the Mayflower in 1620. We'd never thought that we'd find many Manx connection with the Pilgrim Fathers.
But
we have.
Get everywhere.
We have Mr. Miles Standish, and he has the position of military leader of the Pilgrim Fathers, which is a bit of a job, isn't it?
Certainly has a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, and so what is Miles Standish's connection with the Isle of Man? Well, his family have a number of estates, and one of them is Ellenbane in Lazare. It's quite interesting with the north of the island because there's quite a lot of estates up there. You know, there's like Milltown and the Christian family and all that sort of thing. So it's
good land.
Good land, I guess. Mm. Yeah. The Mayflower sets sail in about July 1620 because they're a bit late. So they're a bit late. And they don't have any longitude, so they were lucky to actually find America, really. It took them 10 weeks, apparently. And on board is his wife, Rose. And we know Rose is Manx, which is interesting, but we can't find anything else out about her. My conjecture is that she's somewhere from the north of the island. Yeah, her family's link up and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So I presume it's something like that. What always interests me, you know, in the year 1620, we got the we're sailing across the Atlantic. I wonder what instruments they brought with them.
Mm.
I mean, was the violin established in the early 1600s?
I'd say, well, there would be fiddles of some sort.
Flutes.
That's very simple. Whistles or wooden flutes.
Yeah.
But the fiddle would be probably more of a medieval nature than the classical violin that would come in later on.
It'd be interesting to know what sort of tunes they're actually playing on board, if any.
Yeah.
If they're doing
they would have been singing, though.
Would have been singing, wouldn't it? Yeah. As long as the malnutrition and the scurvy didn't hit them too hard. But anyway, there we are. In 1620, we're sailing. We've got a Manx link, and we're off with the Mayflower. Now, of course, Jamestown has already been established a number of years earlier in Virginia, and that's where they were heading. They were heading to Virginia, but they didn't quite make it.
Oh.
They were 200 miles north in Massachusetts, at Cape Cod.
Oops.
And this is where the Plymouth settlement arrives, and it wasn't too good because they've arrived in November. They hoped to arrive a little bit earlier. They tried to get down the coast to shelter up in Virginia for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. They got chased back by storm. So they've got to sit the winter out there. So a lot of people died. Of 135 persons who went after the winter, there was only 53 left.
Ooh,
so it was a bit of a hard time. Luckily, during 1621, they're having a bit of a better time of it, and the locals are helping them out. Mm-hmm. They're getting some things planted. By November, they've got a harvest, and lo and behold, Thanksgiving.
Oh, good.
So, there we go. There's maybe not a Manxman, but his Manx wife's there.
Yes.
And so the Manx are there at the very, very first Thanksgiving,
wow.
So which is interesting. Yes. Unfortunately, his first wife died. And so 2 years later, 3 years later, he married Barbara, who's the first wife's sister.
Mm.
And she comes out to the States. And, well, it's not the States then, it's a colony, isn't it?
Yeah.
But she comes out, that'll be 1623, and from the north of the island, I presume. And lo and behold, they went on to have seven children.
Oh, good work.
Seven children. So, You were just mentioning before, we've got to mention this, about the Standish family. You may have bumped into one of them.
Well, that's right. Quite a few years ago, I was in a little band with Brescia Madrill and Cinzia Yates.
Yeah.
And we were invited to the Celtic, a Celtic festival in Louisiana.
I don't really associate Louisiana with Celts, but there we go. I think it's more of a French colony, maybe the northern.
Yeah, you'd think so, but no, they celebrate their Scottish heritage.
Wonderful.
In a big way down there, and Irish dancing, stuff like that. They'd never had a Manx band, so they got in touch. So we went out to this festival in Lake Charles, and we were a tiny act compared to the other ones.
Much like the emigration itself.
Exactly, yes. We were like the 2%.
Yes.
And this couple befriended us, and they were very keen when they found out there was a Manx act, because the wife was called Emily Standish.
My word.
And she had traced her roots back all those years, and throughout the festival, they were our best friends. They followed us around, and they were, applauding from all the audience.
So how long ago was that again, Chloe?
Well, it's probably 15, 17 years ago.
Right, okay. Yeah, so we're talking about the best part of a family connection, the Manx connection, a 400-year period.
Well, probably, she was very proud of her Manx roots and had never met anyone from the Isle of Man before. So.
Gosh, I wonder what she was doing down there.
Well, indeed.
Because up in where the Plymouth settlement is, in its Duxburg, Massachusetts, where there is a huge monument to Mr. Standish himself. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so, gosh. So there we go, indeed. A 400-year-old connection. It's amazing. Yes. You were there for music.
Wonderful. I was there for music. Yeah. And in fact, my sister, Maeve, lives in Williamsburg in Virginia.
Ah.
And she is aware of lots of Manx names. There's a graveyard which has got loads of Christians in there.
So, righty-o.
Yes, that was...
It'd be interesting to know if they were being settled there or whether they were... on the way to the Cumberland Gap to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it's a complicated story. Emigration, anyway, and the settling of these lands was full of all sorts of problems. Mm. Yeah. So on the Mayflower, of course, they're Puritans. And I guess there's going to be a lot of English people on there. And really interested to know what their hymn book was like.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it really would be. So we'll move on for a bit. So they've settled up there. So in 1655... we've got William and Jonathan Christian of Mackled, who went to Virginia.
That's probably the graveyard that they're connected to.
Right. And a family named Cottier from Lazare, the north again, of the same name. And what's quite interesting about these early settlers, not all of them, of course, but ones who are recorded, they're of quite well-to-do backgrounds, aren't they?
Yeah, they seem to be at that stage, don't they?
They do, indeed, yeah. So, like for instance, the very first Jamestown colony, there was a lot of, let's say, businessmen in there, and not too much of the hoi polloi. And, the sort of story goes is that they weren't too good at farming, these guys.
No.
So that's why it was, abandoned the first time around.
Right.
Yeah, so but they seem to...
They weren't practical sorts.
And they acquired considerable tracts of land as the family grew. And later on in the years, into the 18th century, Robert Christian was a devoted friend of George Washington.
Oh, wow.
Well, there you go. He's mixing with high plebe people, isn't he, somewhat? Yeah. And, he became very well known in Virginia as an advocate. I haven't actually got where he lived in Virginia. I don't know where that is, but we'll find out that another day.
A listener probably be able to help
you. Yeah. So there we go. The Christian family of the Isle of Man. Gosh, anyway, here's one with friends of George Washington. And of course, this would be 1700s. And then we get to the late 1700s again. They got the infamous Fletcher Christian.
Oh, yes.
From the north of the island.
Oh, a powerful family.
who's gets himself into a little bit of trouble somewhat. Yeah. That's another story.
Another part of the world.
So we're into the 17th century here. And one thing about this, the music around there is... let's have a quick listen to the music of the genre, which may not have been particularly that well established at the time.
No.
So mountain music is my real passion, let's say. So let's have a little bit of some mountain music. Mm-hmm.
wife, my wife's high, walked all the way to the Cumberland Gap. Lay down, boys, take a little nap, oh, go down to the Cumberland Gap. Me and my wife, stoked tailed across the creek on a hickory log.
Listening to Island Life with myself, David Kinley, and I'm talking to Dr. Chloe Woolley at Culture Fannin about the early emigres and settlers off the United States from the Isle of Man.
With the mountain music, what seems to be really quite prevalent is its Celtic influences, doesn't it?
Mm.
So I'm not too sure how much of the Manx was left behind in the Appalachian Mountains, but certainly these airs and jigs and reels from our Irish sea neighbours are in abundance, aren't they?
Well, yeah, Scottish and Irish emigre.
Yeah.
But yeah, huge.
Huge.
Huge influence and mixing with other cultures there as well.
Absolutely.
German and Dutch as well.
Of course, a lot of the Irish and the Scottish, they're emigrating there under different circumstances from the Manx. They're having land clearances and stuff like this. They're being...
It wasn't the rich types.
It wasn't the rich types at all, was it?
It was desperation, really.
Absolute desperation. But they started doing that much earlier than the Manx did in any numbers, because we're coming to more of the Manx emigration now. It seems to me as if these guys, they're from the north of the island, the west of the island, and they're going off to mostly Ohio, which is interesting. So at that time, to get to Ohio, they would have had to gone through the Cumberland Gap. So they probably would have arrived in places like Jamestown and then travelled across to West Virginia, popped out the Cumberland Gap in Tennessee and East Kentucky, and then just headed north to Ohio where the plains were.
Wonder how long that took.
I know, what a journey. What a journey. And in this programme, we'll talk about all sorts of superstitions and monsters and folklore tales, and my word, some of the creatures they've got out there. I thought that the Isle of Man had some fearful creatures, but Appalachia has them in abundance.
Right, they can match Arbogans and Fenodries then.
Indeed. The funny thing is, we'll just go off on a tangent there, rather, for Fenodries. It's just like, Fenodry could be quite helpful, and usually was quite helpful.
Yes.
Whereas I couldn't find anything quite helpful in the Appalachian Mountains.
No, just at
all. Just all absolutely, you know, dreadful.
Something to be scared of.
Yeah. So, as I say, it's... the earliest record of Manx emigration refers particularly to the years 1821 and 1822. William Corkle of Ramsey, another northerner, and his four children set sail to America from Liverpool. He's actually arrived in Baltimore. So I don't know where's he going to go to. Through the north. Yes, here we go. So it says, this is taken from Manx settlement notes, and it does say here quite clearly, some part of the early movement to what was then the Northwest Territory through the historic gap over the Appalachians. So they really had to do this journey. So there's all sorts of people coming down here now. Yes, and the Manx colonization of this Western Reserve resulted in a number of factors, I'm reading here. One of which was a visit of a Manxman, Dr. Harrison. On his return to the island, where his brother, the Reverend Harrison, who was a well-known scholar and vicar of Jerby, we're up in Jerby again.
Gosh, it's
always the Northerners, isn't it?
Adventurous.
But he spoke very fondly of these settlements off the northwest in on Ohio, etc. But you've got to make it through the Cumberland Gap. That's the catch. And so again, the people who were farmers and farm labourers, and particularly of the northern parishes of Jerby, Andrea's, Bride, as well as Kirkmichael and the area around Peel. Their eyes have been turned and they're heading across the Atlantic. Liverpool first, Baltimore next. So that's interesting. Yeah, so from we're into 1825 now. And once we get to 1825, we've got the Erie Canal is now open. And so the Cumberland Gap is not seeing the activity that it used to, particularly from the Manx, because they're going to Liverpool. And because of the Erie Canal, they're just going to New York. And now New York is absolutely a boom town.
The gates are open,
yeah.
Amazing.
So our Manx journey through the Appalachians is sort of somewhat coming to an end. Mm. But we still have a lot of Manx people left of Virginia, etc. Some of the diaries from the guys up there in Ohio. And if I look at my hot spot, my heat map here, you can see.
Oh, yeah.
Ohio is red hot.
So, the Manxman.
So there's Virginia. They've come through Virginia. There's the crux of it all. There's Tennessee and there's East Kentucky. And they've travelled up there. And as you see, there doesn't seem to be much of a hot spot around the southern areas at all.
No.
However, your friend Miss Standish was down in Louisiana, which is pretty deep south, if you ask me. Yeah. But they left some good diaries anyways. Thomas Kelly from Jerby again, and Daniel Cayley from Jerby, William Corlett and his sons, Thomas, and they're from Orisdale, Kirkmichael. They've got some great diaries going on there. In the Brackman Cemetery, the Leroy district, John Tier's tombstone describes him as a follower of Wesley. Mm. So there we go. Mm, so now we've got Wesleyans. We started off with Puritans. Now we're on to Wesleyans.
Yes,
so,
serious stuff.
Yeah. I wonder what sort of music they were playing as well. Because as we go on through this journey, we have some real Manx enclaves where they're just speaking Manx in Ohio.
Yes.
And that's
amazing.
They must be playing all these tunes, etc.
Yeah. The Manx must have kept going for quite a few years in that area.
Yeah. I wonder if they did Timmel Day.
They might have done, yeah.
They certainly would have done Hot Tune, eh?
Oh, I'd hope so.
We would have thought they'd done all the quarterly season ones about it.
Yes. Yeah.
They did Beltane.
Well, perhaps.
I wonder if there's any record of them in Ohio running their cattle through through the burning bracken and stuff like this.
Well, I suppose a lot of them would have been quite happy to leave their superstitions behind. I might deem them a bit old-fashioned, but...
Yes, that's a peculiar thing.
Start a new life, but of course if they're fluent in Manx, that's going to be the way they communicate for quite a few years.
Yeah.
And certainly they... would have sung songs in Manx at that point.
Certainly.
Probably religious,
Yeah. Especially in the very early days.
Yeah.
Yeah, harvest hymns, for instance. Mm. Yeah.
But then English will have come in and dominated.
Yeah.
Same back here.
It's a language of industry and law, isn't it? So it's like what happened here, really. It's a language of industry and law. You want to get by, you got to speak the lingo.
Yes, it is.
Which is unfortunate, but that's the way of the world, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the journey from New York to Liverpool, 63 days. And that's in early 1800s. Well, that's pretty good, considering it took the Mayflower 10 weeks.
Quite speedy.
That's pretty good, isn't it? As we touched on before, the life of an early immigrant was very, very hard. And most of them were poor, apart from these early guys who actually were going to establish estates. And, of course, there was fevers and cholera, all sorts of things that was going on, malnutrition. However, they do start to make some communities. And some of the things that they're doing is weaving and tanning, sugar making from the maple tree, because they're getting really quite far north, which I thought was interesting. So we've got all sorts of guys that even get into smelting from them because they got coke from the woods and stuff like that. So that's really interesting.
Well, it must have been quite lonely when people arrived in this foreign place. You'd have to build that community, find people who spoke the same language.
There was an event that took place in 1863. It was the annual festival held in Cleveland. And the chief speaker that evening was Mr. Sheldon Carouche. And he told several stories in Manx which were perfectly understood by the audience, which was recorded.
Yindersak,
indeed. And also it was related about this occasion. It was the characteristics given to the Manx, and they had a reputation of being a, I quote unquote, somewhat clannish body of immigrants.
Stuck together.
Oh, I know you.
Yes.
I know your father.
Yeah.
Etc.
Definitely a lot of that.
And then we get to Illinois and Iowa and places like that, and again Cleveland. And some of the surnames that appear around this area, Brew.
Oh.
Gosh, it's more of
a. It's a lot of northern.
That's a northern name again. We got Kaylee, Cowley, Callow, Harrison, Carouche, Kissicks, Niels, Quails, Shimon, Tears. They're all there, aren't they?
That's brilliant.
You know, if we turned up there, it's like we wouldn't have left anywhere. All these names are of ours. And the East Ohio. Here's some names from East Ohio. Krellen, Crane, Garrett, Cowan, Quine, Clegg, Cooish. And a name that appears now as Cam. I can't imagine which Cam, C-A-M.
Oh,
so it's an abbreviation. And it seems, according to the North American Manx Society, we have something like 30,000 descendants or something. Not descendants, but there's membership, et cetera. So 30,000, that's not bad.
Pretty huge.
If you consider, you know, if we're going back to the 1700s, you know, our population is like 80, 85,000. I heard it was in the 1800s, it might have only been like 35 to 40.
Gosh,
so it's 1700s. What's the population? It's probably only about 30,000, if that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's something.
It's amazing how we've kept our culture with such a small amount of people.
Indeed. Yeah.
Considering the way our world has gone as well.
Yeah. And I suppose newspapers were a lot more prolific then, and people would be sending letters back to. Telling us the news and who died out in Cleveland, and people, you know, all these societies pop up then, don't they? You've got the North American Manx Association, but then you've also got your London Manx, Liverpool. So people are very keen to hold on to their Manx roots wherever they were.
Agreed. So the North American Manx Society was this body owed its creation to the initiative of five men. James Christian, John Corlett, William Corlett, William Colbert Cubbon, and William Brew. So there we go. Mr. Brew again.
Indeed.
they seem to have done rather well in the Americas, the Brew family. So good on them. So I'm getting into the mid-1800s now. So and we're over into Illinois and Upper Mississippi. And here we have the foundation of the Laxey Church. Cool. And the deed for this plot of about an acre of which the Laxey Church was built is in 1855. And here we got some names: James Callow, Thomas Kelly, John Cowley, and William Harris. And it was a primitive Methodist church.
Right.
So that just fits absolutely perfectly with how the Isle of Man was here, with the temperance societies, etc.
It's very strong here.
So primitive Methodist church in 1855. I think that's quite amazing, because there's a lot of that going. That's how we are in the Isle of Man.
Mm.
We've got temperance and all this sort of thing. So in the original construction, there was certainly some contact with the Manx community of Ohio, since it was recorded that the carpentry was done by Robert Radcliffe, a Manxman from Cleveland, and his brother-in-law, Thomas Kelly. And adjoining the church, there's tombstones adjoining the church. I believe the church is not there anymore, and it's more like one of our keels, I believe. But there is still a graveyard there, and we have some names from the graveyard, which are Crane, Kermode, Cooley, Quirk, Quine, Skillicorn.
names.
Well, that's just like going to any primitive Methodist church graveyard in the Isle of Man, isn't it? It's, yeah. it's just absolutely wonderful. We've been through the Cumberland Gap. Dr. Chloe Woolley, thank you very much for your time.
And
I'm sure this will be the first of hopefully a number of conversations. Next time, we'll talk music.
Got him mired.
Got him mired.
I'm going back to Massachusetts. Something's telling me I must go home.
Listening to Ireland Life, A New World, Old Ways. You can listen back to this programme by subscribing to Manx Radio Podcasts using your usual podcast provider. Got a mired, emu.